Welcome to IndieCider, where we go beyond the game and meet the developers behind today's indie hits.
Hello and welcome to the IndieCider podcast, where I play indie games and then interview the developer. My name is Ken Gagne, and this week I'm playing Pankapu, a platformer recently released for Steam and coming soon to PS4, Xbox One, and a Nintendo system, possibly. This game is developed by Two Kind Studio and published by Plugin Digital. The game's website is pankapu.com, that's P-A-N-K-A-P-U.com. If you've ever played games like Super Mario World, Mega Man, Little Nemo the Dream Master, or Shovel Knight, then you have an idea of the general gameplay of Pankapu. This game is a story that a father is telling his child, similar to The Princess Bride, and in this story is where the game takes place, although there seems to be some correlation between what's happening in the book and what's happening in real life, sort of like the Neverending Story. That's revealed as you play the game. In the story, you are an avatar that has been created by some sort of god of the dreamland that is being invaded by nightmares. It is your quest to rid the land of the darkness and restore hope. When you begin the game, you have no powerful dreamlike abilities. It is simply jump and a sword with which you can slash. As you progress through the game, you gain new abilities, such as a downward strike or the ability to throw your sword. And more importantly, you gain additional aegises, A-E-G-I-S, aegis. You have three aegises that you can switch between on the fly, each of which gives you an entirely different suite of powers. This introduces a sort of Castlevania Symphony of the Night or Metroid-type gameplay, where you can go back to areas and find new rooms that you couldn't access before. There are also hidden mudgeons, which are little spirits hidden in each level, and that increases the replay value by trying to go back and find all of them, as well as the heart pieces that increase your health meter. Pankapu is a terribly pretty game. The colors are so bright and vibrant, and the enemies are very fluid. The animation is great. The controls are responsive, and you can configure it to use a keyboard, PS4 controller, or Xbox One controller, and it will map the controls accordingly. And the music is great, too. There is a little bit of audio narration, spoken English dialogue, during the cutscenes. Not so much during the game itself, though, but the music itself is pretty cool, too. One of the reasons this game is so polished is because it went through so many rounds of iteration and feedback during development. About a year and a half ago, this game was submitted to the Square Enix Collective, which is a program for developers to submit their games for review and feedback, both from potential gamers and from other developers at Square Enix. If the game is accepted, they receive not only a full write-up or analysis review assessment from the developers at Square Enix, but they also may receive additional marketing assistance from that team. However, it does not confer any sort of funding, which is why Pankapu, after passing the Square Enix Collective, then went on to Kickstarter and raised money to finish the development of the game. So there have been a lot of people keeping a close eye on this game, making sure that it stayed on target and that all the elements in the final game actually worked. And I don't just mean from a technical perspective, but from a gameplay perspective. It's a well-balanced game. And so today I'll be interviewing the co-founder of Two Kind Studio about all these processes that the game went through and what he hopes to accomplish with future games in the series. You can find a video of me playing the game paired with the interview you are about to hear at indiecider.net/pankapu, which is also where you'll find links to all the resources mentioned in this episode. Also on that website, you can send feedback about this or other episodes of this show or recommend games for future episodes. You can find a link to our iTunes listing where you can leave a review and find a link to our Twitter, which is at GameBits. In the meantime, here's Jimmy Calhart of Pankapu. Joining me today from Two Kind Studio is the studio's co-founder, Jimmy Calhart, who also on the Pankapu project serves as project manager, game designer, and storyteller. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm fine. Fine, thank you.
Thank you for giving me some of your time. I know there's a six-hour difference between Boston and France where you are, and I know you're also very busy having so many roles on this game and having just released the game earlier this month. What's it been like? I imagine you've been just very busy.
Yes, it was a really busy time because we had a lot of work before the launch, of course, and after we watched all the reviews, we were really attentive to the players' feedback because as we're a small team, we couldn't make a lot of testing. And so we had a small bugs at the beginning, just at the launch of the game. So we had to fix those bugs really, really fast. So we were, it was really intense the first days of the after the launch.
I saw on Steam the announcements about the various patches, version 1.01, 1.02. I think it's great that you're turning those around so quickly and are so responsive to the player feedback.
Yeah, it was really important for us to deliver a game of high quality. So we wanted to fix those really, really fast.
And it seems like being responsive to your audience and seeking feedback is something that's been a part of Punkapoo since its origin. Almost 2 years ago now, before you even went on Kickstarter, you submitted your game to the Square Enix Collective, which allowed you to gain some insight both from potential players and from the developers. What was that experience like?
Oh, it was really, really interesting because Square Enix Collective was a great opportunity for us to show our game to people that haven't heard about it before. So they just discovered the game on this platform, and having those feedback were really, really nice because that was the first time that we were able to see if people like the graphics, like the original idea about the game. During this Square Enix collective campaign, we also launched a small demo of our alpha, so we could have other feedbacks on the game itself, and it was really great because we managed to adjust a lot of things thanks to the feedback of the first testers.
I read the team assessment report that Square Enix produced as a result of your time in the collective, and you were also very responsive to all the player feedback that you got in the comments on that project. What would you say was the most valuable response or advice that you received as a part of that process?
It's a little bit difficult to point on to have one point that is important, but I think the first test we made with Punkapoo, the game was really too easy, and there were not enough contents to find inside the levels. So that's why we added the Mugins, the little characters you have to find in the game. Initially, there weren't in the game, and it was because of the first feedback we had that we added these collectibles.
Oh wow, that's a significant gameplay mechanic to have been added as a result of feedback. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
The collective's report also said that this game should please children and family-oriented consumers due to its colorful graphics and its story. But they also said that it might be difficult to market both to children and to parents. So ultimately, who was your target audience for this game?
Our target audience is mainly the people around 30 years old that played games in the 90s, like Mario's, like Sonic, where when it was the golden age of of platformers. It's our main target. Our main target is the players of the 90s consoles, like Mega Drive. Sorry, in America, I think it's Genesis and Super Nintendo.
That's a great point of reference because when I started playing Punkapoo, I was reminded of a lot of other games, like not only classic titles like Castlevania Symphony of the Night, but even older titles like Mega Man and Little Nemo the Dream Master, and even newer titles like Shovel Knight. So what sort of games, you mentioned Mario, were there other ones that were your inspiration? Because I know that you and your team have worked on a lot of other games together before, but none of them quite like this.
No, we worked together with other members of the team on really different games, on MMORPG, on a trading card game. So it was really different. But we all have the same reference about gaming. We all like indie games like Shovel Knight, of course. And in our background, we also have people who really liked the Mega Man series, Castlevania, of course. And all those games, we wanted all those games to have a melting pot in punk. Zelda also was a main inspiration for punk.
Oh, Zelda. I didn't think of that, but you certainly can't go wrong with Zelda, one of the best franchises of all time.
Yes, because it's not the same type of game, of course, but in the spirit of the game, we wanted to have something inspired by that. But it's not a direct reference.
Now, another classic piece of pop culture that I was reminded of playing this game is the movie The Princess Bride, because both Princess Bride and Punkapoo are framed as an adult telling a child a story. Why did you choose that framework instead of just making it a straight-up platformer?
The story of Punkapoo and the story of the child are related because the child had some problems in its life. And Punkapoo is here to help the child to go over those problems. So both stories are parallels.
There are a lot of classic platformers, though, that don't have a story. For example, Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo, which I would definitely say was part of the golden era of platformers.
Yeah.
Do you think that now, 20 years later, after Super Mario World, it's just an expectation that games have story? Can we get away with a game that doesn't have a story anymore?
I think it's nice to have games that don't have much stories like Mario. But we wanted as a team, as a studio, to develop stories. It's our purpose as a studio to tell stories. So that's why we wanted to have a story in Punkapoo, even if it's a platformer. We think it's a mix that could work.
A lot of your previous work was in MMORPGs, and you found in that medium that you were a little bit more limited in the kinds of stories you could tell. How did Punkapoo free you up to tell the story that you wanted?
It's not only Punkapoo that allowed us to tell the story we wanted. It's being indie developer that helped us because before Punkapoo we worked for other companies. And now we can tell the stories we really want. So Punkapoo is the first one, but we imagined a lot of stories that settle in the same universe. So all the stories we want to tell with Toucan Studio will be set up in this same universe, that Punkapoo.
Do you think those other stories will be the same genre of 2D platformer?
No, not at all. We want to explore different types of games with different stories because we're fans of a lot of types of games. If we can, we'll explore different types of games also.
Wow, that is very ambitious and very forward-looking.
Yes, it may be quite difficult. So it's the way we want to make games, but we'll see if it's possible, of course.
Now, you obviously learned a lot in your previous work on MMORPGs about the kind of stories you want to tell and the kind of team that you want to work on to tell those stories. Now that you've worked on Punkapoo, what would you say you've learned from this project that you'll take into your next one?
Oh, we learned a lot of things. We learned that playtesting is really, really, really important because all the latest sessions we made, I think they improved a lot the game because we learned a lot of things just watching players playing the game. So that's thing we learned with this. And another thing things we learned is trying to be simple. At the beginning of the project, we wanted to put too much things in the game, too much content. As a small team, it's really difficult to put all that together, and with the time, it's quite difficult. So I think the next project will be if not simple, it will be easier to set up, I think.
Do you think you'll be growing the team? Because as we were discussing earlier, you only have about 4 to 5 people working on Ponkapu. Will future projects require more team members?
If we can, of course, we will we'll hire other team members, of course. But we don't want to be a too huge company, a too huge team. Because, as you said, we worked on MMORPG. We worked with big teams, more than 50 people, and it's a huge productions, and we don't really like those types of productions, because everyone is lost in those teams. So we're more in a family spirit here. So we want to have a team that's still pretty small. So I think the more we'll be around 10 people. 10 people will be a good team size.
That's great. In order to make games that are family friendly, you want to work with a team that is family sized.
Yeah.
I want to go back on the story of Ponkapu for one more question, because I understand that you were inspired by the Lakota culture of North America.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It was not intended at the beginning to be inspired by Lakota. It was by chance that we found the Lakota culture. We wanted a god in our universe that would be a trickster god. So we searched in different cultures which character could be an inspiration for this trickster god. And we found the god Iktomi from the Lakota culture, and so in our universe he became Iketomi. And that's the point where when we were interested in the Lakota culture, and we really liked it because it's not a mainstream culture. In video games, we often see cultures, mythologies like Nordic mythologies, Greek mythologies, and we wanted something new, something fresh. And so the Lakota culture inspired us a lot, and we really liked also the names, the words in Lakota, the sonority, the sound of their language inspired us a lot.
Another indie game that was on this podcast 2 years ago was Never Alone, and they worked with the Inupiaq culture to represent their mythology in the video game.
Mm-hmm.
Did you work with the Lakota people or consult with them at all?
We wished, but we couldn't find people of Lakota culture, because we're in France. It was really difficult for us. And we didn't add, so it was difficult for us. But in the future, yeah, if it's possible for us, it will be really great, because we could be more authentic about this culture.
So your game went through multiple stages of development, first with the Square Enix Collective, and then with Kickstarter, and then finally on Steam. And instead of doing early access, you're releasing the game episodically.
Yeah.
And I will link in the show notes to some other interviews you've done about why that's being done for this genre, which is unusual. What I'm curious, though, is that the game engine, I presume, is pretty much complete. So what remains to be done with the remaining episodes? What are you still working on?
We still work on mainly level design and graphic assets, because all the, as you said, all the engine work is done. So it's mainly level design, storytelling, and graphic assets.
Is the story done being written and the voice acting done being recorded?
The main story has been written, so we have the. The beginning, of course, and we have the end. We have all the story, but we have to go deeper and write small stories inside the main story. So because we want to develop all that, but the main story of Punk Apu is written. The main story of Jaharel is written too.
And the game is currently out on Steam. And I read that on Kickstarter, one of the stretch goals that was not made was for a Nintendo Wii U release. But in another interview, I read that the game might be coming to the Nintendo NX. Is that true?
We wish to have the game on Nintendo NX. We work with our publisher to do that, but we don't have any information yet about the Nintendo NX. So it's a wish, but we're not sure to have it on NX. And if we can't have it on NX, we will certainly have it on Wii U.
Okay, but in the meantime, one of the Kickstarter goals you did meet was to have a PS4 and Xbox One release. Has that happened yet?
Yes and no. It hasn't happened yet. It will be released on PS4 and Xbox One at the same time as the Episode 2. So we will release Episode 1 and 2 on consoles directly.
And that will be later this year?
It will be first quarter of the next year.
Gotcha. By the way, one of the things that was recommended to me when I first started playing Punk Apu was to use a controller, so I plugged in my PS4 controller. I have played so many Steam games where I'm plugging in a PS4 controller and it expects an Xbox controller and all the buttons don't map correctly and I get very confused. Punk Apu is the only Steam game I've seen where it lets me specify if I'm using PS4 or Xbox One, and it made everything so much simpler. So thank you for adding that feature.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It was really important for us because we have players that have Xbox controllers, but we also have team members that only have PS4 controllers. So it was really important for us to have both controllers.
Yeah, it's a relatively small thing, but it really makes a big difference.
Thank you.
So I have just one last question, very important.
Mm-hmm.
The Kickstarter project describes you personally as a graduate in Lucy jokes. Can you tell us a joke?
Oh, the main jokes are I don't know the word in English. It's jokes, but play on words.
Like a pun.
I'm not fluent enough in English to make those play on words. So maybe next time I'll prepare one.
No worries. Maybe next time. All right. So thank you very much for giving me your time to speak about Punk Apu. Can you remind our listeners where to find you and your game on the internet?
You can find us on punkapu.com, of course, and you can also find us on Steam. It's more important to find us on Steam, of course, because on Steam you can buy the game. So, and you also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type Punk Apu.
Great, and there will be links to all those in the show notes, which can be found at indiesider.net/punkapu. Jimmy Calhart, co-founder of Two Kind Studio, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
This has been IndieCider, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at IndieCider.net.